Hello, everyone. My name is Kelly Munn with the League of Education Voters, often referred to as LEV. Welcome to our online webinar series, Lunchtime Levinars. Each week of the legislative session, the League of Education Voters hosts free, interactive webinars on important and timely issues. For 2014, we've adapted our online webinars to focus on Washington State's legislative session. This is the fifth in our Lunchtime Legislative Levinar series. Each week, LEV is inviting a legislator or our own government relations director to present, sharing the most pressing issues moving in the legislature and giving you the chance to ask important questions. February 18th is an important date in this legislative session. It's called Policy Cutoff, the last day to consider any bills from the House the bill originated. The legislature is working hard, holding hearings until late in the night to try to give every bill their attention. You will often hear that a bill is being exact, which means to move forward in the process. Typically, a bill first has a hearing to increase understanding of the bill, then the bill has an executive session where the House or Senate debates the merits of the bill and determines if it should move forward in the process. If the bills move forward, it's exact. Our government relations director will be talking to you today about some of the bills that LEV is focusing on and whether or not they have been exact. Before we give the floor to our presenter, here's a few quick reminders. You'll notice we have a chat function on the left-hand side of the webinar. This is a space for you to pose questions to the presenter. Please remember to be respectful, as all this information is public and will be achieved for later access on our website. I want to encourage you to ask questions. I will moderate and ask Frank the questions, but please send us questions throughout the webinar. We'll also have live tweeting during each webinar using the hashtags, hashtag WAEDU, hashtag LEVinar, hashtag WALEG. Follow these hashtags or join at EdVoters or at Frank Ordway on Twitter to join the conversation. Today's presenter is LEV's Government Relations Director, Frank Ordway. Frank has been with LEV since 2008. Over the past 23 years, he has been a managing staff or a board member with domestic and international organizations focusing on sustainable economic development, strategic technology use, social services, energy, transportation, domestic violence, and the environment. Whew. The common theme throughout this work has been empowering people to make positive changes in their communities. Frank received his master's degree in public affairs from the Evans School at the UW and his bachelor's in political science from the University of Oregon. Frank lives in Ferndale with his wife, Rachel, and three children, Dylan, Olivia, and Nora. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Frank Ordway.
Thank you so much, Kelly. And hello, everyone. Thank you for taking some of your valuable time today to join us. As Kelly mentioned, we are, we're basically at the halfway point of the session. And so by early next week, bills have to be out of their chamber of origin. So bills, that were introduced at the beginning of session have to receive a vote on the floor to send over to the other chamber by Tuesday of next week, or they will be dead for the session. So League of Education Voters and everybody else who works down here are all working very hard to try to bring the bills that are still alive to the floor in their respective chambers. And so the schedule for that between now and next Tuesday, most of the time the legislature will be on the floor and they will be taking votes. So some of the bills that we are most interested in and focused on, a couple of them have already been voted off the floor, and we'll talk about those, and we're also going to focus on where we stand with some of our highest priorities. The first thing I want to talk about is one of our top priorities going into the session was the DREAM Act, and currently both chambers have passed DREAM Act bills, or in the Senate's case, they called it the Real Hope Act, and so we are now working on trying to get a final final vote so we can take that bill to the governor's office. There, it will take place. It's just a question of timing. And so that will be a significant step forward for our state in ensuring access to higher education for all of our state's graduates. So that's a very exciting development here. Another bill that we are working very hard on, and there's only one vehicle, so right now there's only a bill alive in the Senate, and it is referred to as 6552. And for many of you who have been involved with LEV for a long time, will recognize this bill as the Career and College Ready bill, establishing a meaningful high school diploma in Washington State. This has been an effort that LEV has been involved in for going on 6 or 7 years now. The State Board of Education, the legislature, all of the major educational institutions in the state have been working on developing this framework, and we expect the bill to come to the floor in the Senate either maybe today or tomorrow morning. It has significant bipartisan support, and at the moment it looks as though we will get a very heavy pro vote of this out of the Senate, and then we will be turning to all of you on the phone to help us pressure the House to make sure that they take up that bill. So that bill number again is 6552. One of the other bills that we are very excited about was brought to us by the Public School Employees Union, who represent the paraeducators in our schools. The paraeducators often are charged with working with our most disadvantaged students. They often are working with kids that have English language learning or are in special ed. And unfortunately, besides their low pay, they also have very little training and professional development support in those very, very important roles. And so there is a bill to establish those standards for training and actually creates a career ladder for paras to move from the para label, if you will, into being a teacher. And that bill came out of the Senate yesterday with a unanimous vote. It was a great moment yesterday, and we expect a similarly powerful vote today in the House on that companion piece, and then we'll work together with the advocates on which one of those bills actually ends up being the vehicle that will end up on the governor's desk. So that's a very significant step forward. Senator Hill in the Senate really provided a great deal of leadership on the bill and was very, very helpful in getting it across, and we have similarly good champions in the State House, and in particular Representative Berquist. So that's an exciting development that is moving very well down here this week. Another one of our big priorities is, as all of you know, League of Education Voters works on early learning, K-12 and higher ed, and we are working very hard on a early learning bill called the Early Start Act, House Bill 2377. It is a very complicated bill, to say the least. It has cleared House appropriations, and it is currently in rules in the House. We are working on a revised version of that bill called a striker, and we hope to be able to bring that bill to the floor on Monday morning. And so if that bill comes out of the House, we will be looking to all of you to help us bring it to the floor in the Senate in the coming weeks. On other areas in K-12 in particular, there was a number of bills that we were working on that died in one chamber or the other, but there are some interesting bills that are moving. One that requires districts to submit to OSPI all the information from their collective bargaining agreements to allow it to be publicly searchable, and that is supported by a broad range of organizations, including ours and including the teachers union, because funny as it might be, even they have trouble getting a hold of collective bargaining agreements from their respective school districts, and so having a system where everybody can get access to them is something that seems to have a broad support. We are also working on a couple of different extended school year bills or extended learning opportunity bills. Because they all had money attached, it's a very, very tight budget here. There's a lot of work going on to try to salvage something meaningful out of those bills. Senate Bill 6163 in particular is one that we are working very hard on, and we're working on a companion to that bill over in the House as well. This is the first time the legislature is taking a serious look at extended learning opportunities and summer school opportunities. I'm not sure that these bills are going to come out in the way that we wanted when we helped introduce them, but we're continuing to try to make improvements as they move through. Other areas of just some things to keep an eye on. There is what is called a seal of biliteracy, essentially giving students who are fluent and proficient in native language and in English that they get a special sort of a seal of biliteracy that will be on their diploma. And so that bill is expected to come to the floor in the Senate today. And there's the companion is still moving in the House as well. Trying to look at what the other big highlights are coming up in the next couple of days here that we might expect to come to the floor. I think those are the main education issues that are coming, that are actually going to make it to the floor in the next day or so. There are some small technical bills to ensure that children in welfare or in foster care get continuity of service in high-quality early learning programs, and those are moving along as well. But right now what is happening here is without a major budget to be written in an election year on a short session, all of those things combined to really restrict the playing field. And so the number of bills that we were working on went down dramatically in the last week. And, you know, by Tuesday, we will have a fairly thin set of bills that are still alive. And anything with money attached to it will be increasingly difficult to keep alive. Right now, the prospects of a supplemental budget indicate that there will be very little new money, if any, spent in this biennium. So that really limits the kinds of bills that can make it to the governor's desk. We were expecting that coming into the session. I believe that if any of you took part of any of our briefings heading into the legislative session, we knew that that was going to be a challenge, and we were right. It has turned out to be there's a lot of bills who simply did not make it through appropriations or through Ways and Means, and what that really causes is it makes it much harder to create deals and trade votes when you don't have a lot of bills in play. And so while we've been fairly fortunate that most of our major focuses coming into the session have either already passed in the case of the DREAM Act or are still alive, it will get increasingly difficult to keep stuff alive over the next week to 10 days. So I see one. So I think I'll end there. Let's spend some time doing some Q&A. So, Kelly, do we have any good questions that have come in?
First, I just want to remind everyone to send us questions. I will sort through them as I get. If I get a lot of them, I'll edit and pick some. But right now, we have a question coming from Carolyn Simpson, and she's asking, "What's the likelihood that the House will take up and pass 6552, which is the College and Career Ready bill?"
Excellent question. And, you know, until it happens, I would say that it is uncertain. However, given that that bill has a Democratic sponsor in the Senate, and we expect a very strong bipartisan vote out of the Senate, it will be very hard for the House to ignore it. Many of you on this call have probably already been encouraged or will be encouraged soon to help us encourage the House to take it up. And the good news here is that the number of organizations that have been working on this process include some of the state's biggest employers, include a large number of school districts, and they are all being organized to help apply pressure on the House to take up this bill. So if we get a strong bipartisan vote out of the Senate, if we get the state's largest corporations lending a hand, if we get school districts and community activists like all you all making your calls, I believe and hope that that will create enough space for the bill to come to the floor in the House and to overcome a small group of legislators in the House that oppose this bill.
Several people on this call, this webinar, are signed up to call legislators next week, which I want to thank profusely for. And for those of you who are on this call, if you are willing to give 3 minutes of your time one day next week, there are two legislators that I would be asking you to call, and I'd be happy to give you the details. You can contact me at Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, at educationvoters.org. I'm going to ask Karen Albers question, which is on transportation. It has a direct result on education because of the tax, but there's been some discussion surrounding the transportation bill in addition to the potential 10-cent sales tax increase, discussing redirecting money from the general fund to the transportation fund. Is that still true?
It is looking increasingly unlikely that a transportation package is going to come out of this session. And one of the major sticking points is that very provision. There's a 90% agreement on the amount of money to be raised and where that money would be invested, but there are just a few small technical issues that are causing disagreement, and one large one, which is the redirecting of money from the general fund that would normally be available for education and reinvesting it in transportation projects. But right now, Karen and everyone, it does not look at, the prospects for a transportation package vote right now look very, very dim. And so we do not expect to see a major transportation package come out of this session.
Thank you, Frank. So I want to remind people that you can send in questions. We really want this to be an ongoing discussion with both you and Frank. I just moderate. In the meantime, I have a question. Frank, could you give a further explanation on the paraeducator bill? It is a kind of unusual for a brand new bill to get such a strong vote in the Senate and likely a strong vote in the House. So can you tell us what how kids are going to benefit?
So one of the it is a remarkable achievement that this bill has received such widespread support in the school community and from school advocacy organizations in a very short amount of time. But, you know, one of the critical things here is that the paraeducators play such an important role in our schools. They are often, you know, providing assistance and providing direct service to our most at-risk students. And as I mentioned before, and the other thing that's really interesting about paraeducators and very important for us all to take note of is that they often reflect the ethnic diversity of our school districts better perhaps than our teaching corps. So if you have issues, and we're increasingly focused on culturally responsive instruction, culturally comfortable settings for students, and paraeducators can play a major role in that, in increasing the level of cultural responsive instruction in our schools. And so by providing them with a career ladder, with some standards for training, for professional development, we can really maximize the use of paraeducation in our classrooms in a way that we're just not taking advantage of now. And so by doing that, by increasing their effectiveness, by providing them with professional development and giving them more tools to do their jobs, they could have a real impact on our most at-risk students and also give the paraeducators a career ladder in the future to move from being a para into other careers within education. And so it is it's just a spectacular idea. It's way past due, and the Senate's unanimous vote yesterday shows that in a very, very partisan setting, in an election year, that good ideas can get through, and this is a good one. And I think it's also interesting that a public employee union was the genesis of this, and that they asked for standards, they asked for some accountability, and that also the folks at the public school employees union deserve a great deal of credit.
You haven't spoken about this, but I know that several of the listeners are very interested in this subject. Can you explain what the 1080 hours were in the college readiness framework?
Yes.
And what happened with it?
So when 2261 was passed, and I know many of folks on the call were deeply involved in pushing that bill through, the opportunity to earn 24 credits and a meaningful high school diploma was, for many of us, the most exciting thing in that bill. And at the time, the way that conversation was constructed was that the state was not paying for enough instructional time, and that the state needed to assume the responsibility for, you know, what many people called the sixth period of the day or a sixth period day. And the way the original law was written, that it required the state to fund, especially for high school and middle school students, up to 10, what we call 1080 instead of 1,000, you know, an additional 80 hours of instruction to help prepare them for that meaningful high school diploma. In the budget last year that went out, the 1080 hours were indeed funded, but the way in which that money went out to districts in some cases really was very difficult for the district to administer. Now, some places I will, you know, say that their inability to administer it was it was lack of flexibility on the adults' part in those schools to figure, you know, they frankly just weren't being very creative, or they just weren't wanting to change the way they were doing things today. So some of the concerns about 1080 was frankly just adults in the system not wanting to change. In other settings, however, there were significant problems with the 1080 that would have restricted the ability for that school to deliver professional development effectively, and in particular in districts that do not have a lot of local levy money to help offset costs, they were looking at having to eliminate most of the time that they had dedicated to professional development, and were going to have to eat up all of that in order to provide an additional instructional time, and that's just not a good trade. We want our instructors to be able to get that good professional development. They need it. Our kids need it. And so that we were sort of cutting off our nose to spite our face with the way that the money went out. So, and I also think it's important to reflect on the fact that the intent was not to necessarily increase the amount of time that kids were being instructed. It was to increase the amount of time that the state was paying for. So if the state is going to require you to deliver a 24-credit diploma, we needed to be paying for the entirety of that time. And so the deal that has been worked out maintains the goals of increased instructional time, but gives the districts some flexibility and leeway in how they average it and how they accomplish this goal. But for us, the priority has always been a meaningful high school diploma. And one of the ways in which we got the school community on board with this was to offer them flexibility and relief from the 1080 hours. And I want to give the superintendents who were involved in that work a great deal of credit, because they came to Olympia at the beginning of the session and said, we want to deliver a career college ready framework to our students. We want to ensure our graduates are leaving high school with a meaningful diploma. But the provisions of the way we were sent the money for the 1080 hours is going to make it more difficult for us to do that. Help us figure a way out so we all get to the goal we want, which is a meaningful high school diploma. They were very constructive in those conversations, and they worked very closely with Senator Rolfes and Senator Dammeyer in crafting a temporary relief or a temporary accommodation and how we're going to do 1080. But for Lev, again, our big goal and our main focus has been make sure we get a meaningful high school diploma on the books as the law of the state, and it looks like this bill is going to help us do that.
We have about 7 minutes left. I would we really want to respond to your questions, so please send them in. I have one queued up here. We had Representative Kagi on our webinar a couple of weeks ago, and she spoke about the Early Start bill, but a lot of the people who are on this call were not there. So okay. Could you give a brief overview of the Early Start bill?
You bet. So our state has two primary major investments in early learning. If you take kindergarten out of the equation for the moment. And they are a program called ECAP, the Early Childhood Education and Assistance Program, and the other one is Working Connections Child Care. ECAP is essentially a state version of Head Start. It is a very high-quality program that provides both educational services as well as health and other sort of referral and support services for families that are in, you know, very, very high poverty conditions. You know, so it's only for people that are of 100 that are around basically the federal poverty level is who qualifies for that program. We also have Working Connections Child Care, which serves many, many, many more children and is a legacy of our nation's welfare program, which it was designed to give a safe and healthy place for kids to be so their parents can go back to work or go back to school. But that program never had any educational components or requirements or even, frankly, any real drive toward high quality outside of health and safety. So while ECAP does a very, very well, it serves a small number of students, only 10,000, I believe, at this point, and we have many thousands who are unserved by that program, whereas Working Connections has thousands of kids in it but does not have high quality. So what Early Start is doing is taking advantage of what we were given from the federal government in our Race to the Top Award for what's called Early Achievers, and it created a framework and a training and a professional development framework to help our child care system increase its quality. And what Early Start does is set our state on a path toward ECAP and Working Connections Child Care to be merged into a single program, of high-quality, all-day early learning for our most at-risk children in our state. The federal folks who've been working with us on this bill think it is one of the most innovative approaches they have ever seen in order to really capitalize on both the federal and state investments for our most at-risk youth into an education program. We have had this bill reviewed by outside experts, folks at the Gates Foundation, and everybody is thrilled with the policy framework that's created by this bill. And so it's complicated. There's a lot of providers out there in family homes, in centers, in schools in rural areas that all are current providers. And to try to craft a bill that ensures that we have all-day settings and they're of high quality impacts all of them. And so we have to go with great care to make sure that we don't upset any current quality programs or cause an issue where maybe a kid that's currently receiving high-quality service for some reason can't under the new law. And so those are the things that are being wrestled with right now. But it is a what we would hope is by ensuring that all students in our state, low-income students, kids from who are in welfare or in the foster care system, that we are assuring that they are getting high quality. The data just jumps off the page on what results you get when you can get kids into those settings. And so some of you who may live in Seattle know that Seattle is pursuing a local UPK effort. And so this movement is picking up steam around the country. You have very conservative states, West Virginia, Oklahoma, who are aggressively pursuing increased investments in early learning. You have cities like Boston and Seattle who are going it alone in their own efforts, and we are trying to do that work on a statewide basis here with the Early Start Act.
Frank, this is our last question, and then there's a few comments from me. Does the result of the College and Career Readiness Bill 65 to cause a delay of the 24 credits from the class of 2018 to 2019?
It does. 2019 is the current goal for that bill. And so every year of delay that we have had in trying to get this Career College Ready framework adopted, we are losing another generation of students. And it's heartbreaking. And there are continued efforts to push this date back even farther. And we will fight with every ounce of energy to maintain the goal of 2019.
Thank you, Frank. That was an excellent presentation. For all of you listening, don't forget, if you missed part of the presentation or would like to download the slide, they are available on our website at educationvoters.org. I would like to just make an editorial comment. Alfred Freitas had posted that he's reminding us that numbers matter, people showing up matter together, and to invite us all to join the Washington State PTA and our respective organizations to on the steps of Olympia for Martin Luther King Day. And we can't have a call like this without actions. I have two actions for you. Please contact me at kelly@educationvoters.org if you're willing to take 3 minutes sometime next week to call a couple of legislators about the College and Career Readiness Bill. And also, much easier, you can just simply sign a petition that we have going out with the Excellent Schools Now Coalition supporting increased college and career readiness. It's a very generic petition. And if you do sign it, please forward it to your friends, too. The numbers matter on a thing like petition. The link is posted in the chat room, in the chat on your screen. And please join us next week on Thursday, February 20th, for our next legislative webinar, and we will let you know soon when we have a legislator lined up. They're so busy they can't talk to us right now, but we will have one because they'll be ready to talk then. So until then, what's your most pressing concern this legislative session about education in Washington State? Join the conversation on Twitter, hashtag WaLeg, hashtag WaEDU, hashtag LevInR. And please tell your friends to join us. So tune in once a week, 30 minutes, your legislators, your issues. Thank you, and have a good day.